You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Well, wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
This podcast is being brought to you by Voyage AC.
Der Nas Nak.
Gesundheit?
Right, language, hon. But I wasn't sneezing. I was reading this spread in German El Decor magazine. I think it translates to for the nose. Hmm. They're highlighting all these beautifully fragrant candles, and guess who makes this one right here on the left?
Let me guess. Voyage AC?
Exactly, hon. Everything from Voyage AC smells incredible, and it is your destination for all these amazing candles and gifts. You'll want to go online right now and check out their beautiful votive candles, incredible fragrances, and gorgeous face and body products. So, hon, how can our listeners find Voyage AC?
You can find everything on their website at www.voyageac.com. That's VoyageEtcie.com.
And as you know, Melanie is willing to give my friends and family discount to all our listeners right now.
What?
That's 10% off everything you buy.
Right. All you need to do is enter the only one at checkout.
That's right. All you have to do is enter the only one when you make your purchase. Voyage AC is an olfactory journey of candles, perfume, and organic beauty products.
I'm Mistress Marley, and I'm the only one who gets paid to humiliate men. Like, okay, I've never dominated anyone in person, just like online. Like, how do I do this? But as soon as I just walked up to him right away, it was just like, where's the deposit, loser? And that just came right out my mouth. Oh, he got on his knees and started handing me the cash. That's when I was like, I was made for this.
Imagine celebrating your 27th birthday in Tulum, Mexico. A trip financed by your online suitors who obeyed your financial commands and waited only for you to tell them how much money you required. Pro Dominatrix, or Findom, Mistress Marley, Googled how to make more money after getting her degree in fashion design and discovered the world of BDSM. But what would you do if, when it came to the psychological kink of controlling someone's wallet, you realized you had a very special skill set? Would you take the safe route and pursue a career in fashion? Or would you take the money that the men were lining up to give you? Hi. I'm Laura Cathcart-Robbins, and this is The Only One in the Room. In September 2018, I found myself in an all-too-familiar position. Looking around the room at the other attendees at a famed writer's retreat, I realized that I was the only Black woman in the room. When I wrote about my experience for the Huffington Post, something surprising happened. 24 hours after my piece went live, I had 568 direct messages in my inbox. These were messages from people of all races, ethnicities, creeds, and nationalities who had connected with my piece because they, too, had felt othered. These are the stories we want to share. This podcast is for anyone who has ever felt alone in a room full of people, which is to say that this podcast is for everyone. You're listening to The Only One in the Room, presented by Lipstick and Vinyl and executively produced by Christina Barcy. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to like and leave us a review of your thoughts on the show. And if you have an only one in the room story you'd like to share, you can DM us on Instagram at the only one in the room. Enjoy the show. All right. We are talking to Mistress Marley today. And here's my question for you before we start the interview. I'm going to name off some people. Cruella DeVille from 101 Dalmatians, Harley Quinn from The Suicide Squad, Maleficent from the movie Maleficent or Snow White, or Cersei in Game of Thrones. Which is your favorite female villain?
Oh, definitely Maleficent. I was Maleficent for Halloween last year.
Were you really?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't see that picture when I was looking at your social media.
I don't think I did either. I went through your pictures as well.
Did you post it?
Yeah, I posted it. So I actually had like a kinky Halloween party last year. And I went as Maleficent. And she's my absolute favorite.
Okay. Oh, then I asked the right question. I knew that yes. You would have a favorite villain, of course. Thank you for that. I am Laura Cathcart Robbins, and this is the only one in the room. But I'm never the only one in this room because, as usual, my boyfriend, producer, and co-host, Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, is here as well.
Hey, honey.
Hey, hun. Say, honey, I'm so excited.
I know. This is pretty cool.
We're talking to Mistress Marley. Let me tell you who she is. She is a pro dominatrix who specializes in financial domination. Mm. The psychological kink of controlling someone's wallet.
I'm scared.
Right? No, your wallet should be scared.
It's something wiggling in the back of my pants.
She's located in New York City. She organizes events and classes that help teach aspiring doms in the art of BDSM, along with teaching safety and consent, which is huge. She's also an online kink educator and sex worker activist. To further her community organizing, she is a founder of Black Dom Sorority, a collective of Black and Afro-Latina doms practicing dominance and BDSM. So welcome, welcome, Mistress Marley.
Hi, thank you for having me.
How do you identify? That's something I always ask our guests. How do you identify?
So I identify as she/her.
Do you identify as a kink?
I identify as just a dominant top, a sensual sadist. Those are like my kinky identifiers.
Oh, yes. A sensual sadist.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you for that. And I just want to mention that we're not using your real name for your protection. So we are calling you by it's not a stage name. It's your professional name, Mistress Marley.
Yes.
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 All right. So this is what I'm going to read to you. This is what flipped me out over you. This is the front page of the style section of the New York Times a few weeks ago. Full spread. And it says this: to celebrate her 27th birthday, Mistress Marley, a professional dominatrix from Harlem, flew to Tulum, Mexico, where she rented a modern 4-bedroom villa with a limestone pool, private beach, personal chef. Whenever she wanted money, she said she would set up her phone on the beach and command her online suitors to chip in. And I was like, what is this? Who is this sister doing this? I've got to know more. So I was so, so happy when I tweeted and got a response from you and your representation and got to put this interview together. So thank you for that. I really want to jump right into that, but I just want to talk just, you know, for a few minutes about, because you grew up in Greenville, North Carolina. Is that right?
Yes.
And when you and I talked, we talked about how you were kind of a rebel, a risk taker.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that?
Yeah, definitely. I was a rebel, risk taker growing up. I was always the kid. And from as early as I remember in elementary school, just wanting to stick out from everybody else. Mm-hmm. Like the kids would be on the playground playing and all doing the same thing. And I was like, ew, I don't want to be by them. They're so boring. So I was always just that kid that just separated myself, not in a loner type way, but just in a way of that I just felt like I was always destined for something just better.
And then you were always interested in fashion. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
Like from the time you could remember, like were you playing dress up? And
I want to say around middle school. So I grew up in a very big family of 3 boys, 3 girls.
Mm.
And my mom very much took pride in the girls and dressing us up, whether it was for church, a cookout, an event, anything. We were always dressed up. And I want to say my love for fashion didn't really come in until maybe 7th or 8th grade.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I came upon like Tumblr was a thing and seeing all these different styles, because there was only so much I could see living in a small town. So I had to go on the internet to see more.
Right. And then you and I also talked about not really coming into your sexuality until college. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, so I had maybe 1 boyfriend in high school, and even still, it was just like, oh, you know, not really that much into sex or having sex. Just pretty much just wanted a boyfriend to say I had a boyfriend. But then when I came into college and I ended up going to school like an hour away from home, and it was way more people there from all over, and just, you know, seeing more attractive men and men that, you know, were cooler than the guys in high school and stuff. That's when I more so came into my sexuality, who I was, more so really started getting to the art of seduction and mystery and things of that nature.
So you kind of came into your own then.
Yes.
Yes. All right. So then talk to me about sugar babies.
Okay. So my first introduction to sex work was being a sugar baby. So, well, I want to go back and say my first introduction was being a stripper. So
while I was
in college, me and one of my girlfriends went and tried out the strip club just for fun. We were bored or whatever. That's what we did. We were bored. And we got the audition. And then I remember this guy came in, a customer came in, and he would always spend money on us and things of that nature. And then one time he just came out and asked us, like, who's taking care of you girls? Like, do you girls need a sugar daddy? And we were like, you know, what's that? And we had to even end up looking it up. And we ended up dating him together. So my first introduction to being a sugar baby, luckily, was with someone else. So I felt more safe. We had each other's backs. I never felt like I was going alone out by myself because I had her. And one thing about being a sugar baby that people don't realize is that the cards are kind of always in the sugar daddy's hand.
Tell me what those roles are. Can you define the roles sugar baby and sugar daddy?
Yeah. So basically, a sugar daddy is a wealthy man. We call them, they can either be splendid daddies, meaning they're not that rich, or they can be called whales. So most of the time, whales are like your CEOs and presidents of companies and things of that nature. They're a wealthy man that takes care of a younger woman, which is the sugar baby, whether that's taking her on vacations, paying student loans, paying rent, bills, basically just giving her money for whatever she might need to make her life better, so that the both of them can live in this fantasy type relationship. Because I call sugar baby and sugar daddy relationships fantasies.
Right, right. And in exchange for that, what do you give him in exchange for that?
So it really depends on the type of relationship. So when I first started out and didn't know much about sugaring, the relationship was more, you know, intimate and more romantic and things of that nature. But the older I got and had having those upfront conversations, I was finding that there were some sugar daddies that, you know, were older and just wanted some company or a friend. There were some that would go to like a certain events and would want a younger woman on their arm.
Right.
There were some that were maybe like married and just wanted an escape, but they didn't necessarily want anything sexual. They kind of just wanted a friend that was younger that they paid. So it really depends. I think people hear sugar baby, sugar daddy and think, oh, it's just a younger woman having sex with a man all the time for money. Like, there's so many different types out there.
Really interesting.
Yeah.
And I think I told you when we were talking that, you know, years ago when I was in my 20s, my early 20s and maybe late teens, we call them sponsors, but not quite the same arrangement. But like if all my friends and I wanted to go to a club, we would look to the girl who had a sponsor for the evening and the sponsor would pay everybody's way and get us in the VIP room. And it was just very common.
Yeah.
And the deal with them, the sponsor, was just kind of like to be around us. Like that's what they got. They got the pleasure of our company.
Right.
And I didn't think anything of that arrangement at all. I thought it was pretty genius, actually, at the time. So tell me about your transition. I know you had gone to college, right?
Yes.
And you get out of college and you want to make money in fashion. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So what happens next?
So basically, while I was in college, I had found a sugar daddy from, there's this website called Seeking Arrangements. That's the most popular one that everyone uses. They've been featured on so many things. They used to have like little events for sugar babies in New York. So there would be networking events for other sugar babies to meet each other. And I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
We did not have that in North Carolina. People were not out about those things. And then you come to New York and people are out and they would organize parties to where they would like bet certain sponsors and have them come to parties. So I was going to small events like that. And I met a sugar daddy from the website. Our relationship was about, I want to say 7 to 8 months, only because his wife got sick. He could no longer dedicate his time. But I was really just a friend. He really needed someone to go to Broadway shows and out to dinners and things of that nature. So I was that person. And then for exchange, he was like paying for my like tuition and, you know, my books and like taking care of my bills and things of that nature. But after he kind of like dropped out, I ended up working at a swingers club.
Right. I forgot that. Yeah.
Yeah. So after I graduated grad school, I went on Craigslist for a job listing and saw that they needed a hostess for an adult club. I didn't know what that meant. I was like, isn't all clubs adult clubs? Right. I mean, you have to be 18 and up, you know? Yeah. So I was like, what does that mean? So I get there and he basically tells me what it is. And I'm like, sign me up. Like I was never like, oh my God, no, I'm not doing this. I was like, sign me up. Like, this is me. So I started working there. And then there was another older lady that worked there in Coat Check. And she was a dominatrix. And she was telling me all her old stories about being a dom back in the day. And I was just like, what is this dominatrix thing? Mm-hmm. And all I had known about BDSM at that point was 50 Shades of Grey. And that's like the worst example that anybody could use.
That's what I hear. Yeah.
Right. And then also like Rihanna had the song S&M and she was doing dominatrix type things in it and stuff. But I want to say the domination really hit me when I searched financial domination online.
Right. Right. So tell me about that.
Yeah, so the job at the Swingers Club was barely paying anything. They only had parties like once a week, so I only got paid when I worked a party. I was still working like in small retail jobs like Bloomingdale's and stuff like that in the store, not corporate. And crazy thing happened. I broke my foot while I was working at Bloomingdale's and it put me out of work. And I was just like, what the fuck? Like, what am I going to do now? And I remember just going online typing, how do I make money online as a woman? Mm-hmm. And financial domination came up and I clicked it and the rest has just been history.
So did you know when you clicked on it, once you read the description, did you know like, oh, this is, I can do this?
I had a little bit of doubts because at first, just like anybody else, I was like, there's no way this is real. Like, I mean, I get like the sugar baby, sugar daddy stuff. Like, I know that's real, but the fact of someone sending you money and you never see them in person and they just send you anonymous amounts to me just sounded crazy, you know?
Yes.
And I just clicked it and I ended up doing my research and it brought me to Twitter because FinDom like on Twitter is huge. That's where a lot of the community is. That's where a lot of people post their content. If you just search hashtag FinDom, you'll see it.
Mm-hmm. And that's financial dominatrix or financial
financial domination. Yeah. So I ended up jumping right into it. Like I've always had the personality where I see something and I try not to overthink it too much. I'm just like, let me just do it. What's the worst that can happen? And now I'm where I'm at now.
We're going to take just a quick break to tell you about a cool new product that Scott and I discovered. And we'll get back to our guest's amazing Only One story in just a minute.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Do you like science fiction? I'm Carrie Bechet, and if you loved movies like Arrival or Interstellar, then you're going to want to check out my podcast, Hypothetical. On Hypothetical, we tell speculative sci-fi stories interwoven with real science. New episodes every Tuesday, available wherever you get podcasts.
So you talked about that, the older woman who was in the club, the Coat Check woman who was a dominatrix. Mm-hmm. Did you find other dominatrix who helped you? Like, girl, you need to do this or check this out or this is where you need to start? Because there's a lot that has to go into it, right?
Yes. So unfortunately, I didn't even have anyone to help me. I mean, even the Coat Check lady, she wasn't really helping me. She was just telling me about how she used to do it and her experience. Mm-hmm. There was never really any help. I used to just see other doms on Twitter or just see other doms in social media and stuff like that. But I never really reached out because everyone just had this standoffish attitude of, well, I had to learn on my own. So you need to learn on your own. Mm. You know, and I have this personality anyway, where I just try not to ask for help unless I absolutely need it.
Right.
I believe in trying to get everything on my own first, trying to learn everything on my own, because to me, that builds character rather than someone just trying to hand it to me.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I can say I didn't have any help at all.
Wow. And then you and I talked a little bit about race. We actually talked a lot about race, but can you tell me, like, was there a difference then? Like, were the dominatrix in the community, was it mainly white, or were there black doms that you just weren't in touch with? Like, how did that work?
When I came onto the scene 3 years ago, I want to say that it was definitely majority white.
Okay.
I want to say between then and now, the black dom, like, presence has really boomed.
Okay.
And I don't know if that's because of like people like me in mainstream media or like people just really putting it out there to support black sex workers, but the boom is big. But when I started out, it was rare when I saw black dom.
Yeah, but how was that for
you? I mean, it was something that pushed me even more.
Mm-hmm.
It never had me like, oh, there's no other black women, so why am I doing this? It had me like, oh, there's no black women. Let me make spaces for myself. Let me make spaces for other people.
Yeah.
And that's how I created Black Dom Sorority and do all these things for black women. But it really just pushed me to really change the environment and the culture of what, you know, domination period for black women is, you know, especially in the light of social media, because for the most part, dominatrix work has always been something more low key,
right.
Especially back in the day. It was something where you had to know someone or call a provider or real old school. But now with social media, it's like you can find a dom just with a click.
You sure can. Because when I was doing my research for you, I found a lot of them.
Just
by typing in mistress, you find a lot of dominatrix.
Right.
So tell me then about that first client and how that came to be.
Oh, wow. So I was just doing my regular content thing on Twitter. So from what I observed, the biggest thing in FinDom was being reimbursed for something you spent already. So I was seeing that people were reposting receipts from going out to eat and things of that nature. I said, okay, let me repost this $50 receipt of me, you know, getting something to eat. And put my Cash App up there and see what happens. And I think the same day that I did that, I got a Cash App notification from an anonymous person. So they never messaged me and said, hey, I sent you money or anything. It just came and that was it.
Wow.
And I was like, yeah, I'm just sitting there thinking all day. I'm like, is this from someone anonymous or maybe somebody I know? I said, well, nobody's randomly sending me $50. I haven't asked anybody for $50 besides FinDom Twitter. So it had to be that. And that just put the spark in me to just go full force, like all out.
I want to try that and see what happens.
I know you want to try that too.
Just post a receipt.
There are men that do it. So my best friend's a guy. He's a cash master. He gets sent money. So
he's a cash master.
Is that what they call the men?
Yeah.
Cash.
Yes, so they call the men cash masters. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Scotty's writing that down. Oh, that's great. Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me about the first person that you actually had an interaction with then.
So the first person I ever had an interaction with was someone that booked me for a domination session. I started out strictly in financial domination. I always had an interest in BDSM, but I started out strictly in financial domination because it was virtual. It gave me opportunity to not really like feel like I wasn't being safe. Gave me opportunity to kind of build my online voice and persona and who I was as a dom.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say after a couple months, I had someone reach out and they were like, hey, mistress, I really like an impact play session. So, you know, that impact play involves like a flogger or a whip or a paddle, you know, hitting someone impact or spanking. And they reached out and they was like, you know, I really want to do the session, whatever. So I'm like, okay, well, you know, you need to pay deposit, but they didn't want to pay deposit online. They were like, I only feel good paying deposit in person. We can meet in a public park if you think that's like safe or whatever. I'm like, okay, cool. Like, I'll meet this person in a public park. I'll have my friend in the like in the shadows, with me. And I was nervous for that meetup because I'm just like, okay, I've never dominated anyone in person, just like online. Like, how do I do this? But as soon as I just walked up to him right away, it was just like, where's the deposit, loser? And that just came right out my mouth. In my head, I was like, whoa, where did that come from?
Right? What did he look like?
He was middle-aged, heavy-set, white man, bald head.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so how did he respond when you said, where's the deposit, loser?
Oh, he got on his knees and started handing me the cash. What? And that's when I was like, I was made for this.
That's crazy. Were people looking at you because you were in a public
place?
Yeah,
they were. Yeah. They were. I think that was the thrill for me. I never at one point was like embarrassed, like, hurry up, get up. I was just like, that's what you're supposed to do. And I'm like, it's New York. Crazier things have happened here. Like,
right, for sure. So that time, that first time in person, you brought your friend with you to wait in the shadows. Mm-hmm. I saw this. I don't know where I saw this. I saw this either online when I was researching you, or maybe it was in that article, but you have some rules. And one of them is make sure you've done your research.
Right.
And so what does that mean? What does that mean to your clients?
So if someone is coming to book me for the first time, they need to make sure they know who Mistress Marley is. And I feel like at this point, if you don't try to research who Mistress Marley is and can't find anything, you weren't trying, because at this point I'm everywhere.
Yes. Yes, you are.
So I always tell them, like, why would you want to book a mistress that you know nothing about? I always tell people, do not book based off my looks, because BDSM is way more than looks and sexual attraction. BDSM is about psychological, mental, emotional, things of that nature. So I always tell people, do your research on me. First, see if I even offer the kinks you're into, because I won't do anything that I'm not comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always get those potential clients that reach out and say, can you offer this? And I'll tell them what I offer, and they still try to push it. And those people have to just block. Those are people you don't want to meet for a session. Anyone that's trying to coerce you over the internet, it's already not going to be a good thing in person.
Mm-hmm. So you have your boundaries about what you will and you won't do.
Exactly.
And it's not just about, oh, this is this fly sister who looks really good. It needs to be the right match, right? The right fit.
Right.
And then the second one I saw is approach respectfully. Do not address her as beautiful, baby, etc. It's mistress or Mistress Marley.
Yes.
And so that's just to keep the scene intact, right?
That's to keep the scene intact. And then that's just respect. Mm-hmm. So there's different tiers of like dom names. So a mistress is someone who's been teaching, who's been doing this for a while, which I still feel like I still have a lot of learning to do. But on the education aspect, I'm a mistress. I feel like I've earned that title. I feel like I've done the hard work in my community and just within myself to earn that respect. Mm-hmm. So I don't want anyone coming to me saying, hey, baby, hey, beautiful, hey, sexy. You will automatically just get blocked.
Right, right. And then it says, for an in-person session, be prepared to provide photo ID and schedule a public meet and greet. So how do they provide that photo ID? Do they send you a picture of it, or do they need to show it to you in person?
So usually it's a picture, and I have them send it to me through Proton Mail. So Proton Mail is an encrypted mail site that a lot of sex workers use and things of that nature, just so that our information is protected. It has end-to-end encryption. So I just tell them to send their ID through that. They're allowed to cover up their address and whatever little the ID numbers if they want to, but I need to see their face and their real name. Right. And then after that, we would do a public meet and greet. And that's either at a restaurant, a retail store, or a park. It's never any, they never come to my house. I never meet them at a hotel. I never go to their homes.
And so when at that public meet and greet, like with your first client, do you dominate them there? Or is it just like an exchange, you're assessing who they are?
It's more for me assessing who I am, because me dominating them at the meet and greet is basically giving them a free session.
Exactly.
And that's not what's going to happen. Yeah.
Right.
So that's
not
going to happen. I mean, naturally, I'm a dominant woman. I might come off a little dominant, but it's not full force of get on your knees, do this and do that. It's more so just like, this is who I am. Why do you want to book? What are you into? What are your hard limits, your soft limits? Do you have any injuries I should be made aware of? Do you have any references? It's things of that nature, which is, it's like a cross check, because even before the meeting, I ask for all that stuff.
Right.
I try to get it in writing, and I try to get it verbally.
Right. And then the last thing I saw was Mistress Marley will never be intimate with you. What does that mean?
So I will never be intimate, meaning that there will never be any penetration unless I'm doing pegging. You guys know what pegging is. So pegging is basically when the woman puts on a strap on and pegs the man.
Oh, okay.
Anally.
Scotty's looking at me like, you knew that. okay, sorry. but nothing's going in you.
No.
Okay. All right. Mm-mm. And kissing?
No.
No kissing.
No. So here's my thing. Like with BDSM, it's like across the board, you talk to a lot of doms. It's mostly psychological, emotional, mental, things of that nature. And I want to say 99.9% of the time, I am not attracted to my clients.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it's more so just about torture and sadism. And I might put some sensuality in there, like whipping, wax play, all the things of BDSM that I love, but it will never be intimate. There will never be any kissing. That line is just something that I feel like should not be crossed in BDSM, especially in a pro dominatrix session. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're into BDSM with your partner, that's different. So if I had a boyfriend that was a sub or into BDSM, of course I'm going to kiss him. Of course I'm going to have right. sex with him. That's my boyfriend.
Right.
But in a professional setting where someone is coming to me to pay me for that, it's not going to happen.
Have you ever had anybody that you felt like the torture was going too far, like they wanted more pain than you were willing to dispense?
I don't think so. I play a lot with like safe words and stuff like that mm-hmm. in my sessions.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever had anyone that was just like, you weren't hitting me hard enough or whatever.
Okay. 'Cause
usually like I'll be like harder, softer, whatever. And they'll tell me.
Right.
So it's up to them to really speak up and speak their mind.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So can you take me through an in-person session versus a virtual session?
Yes. Yeah, so basically with a virtual session. So say if someone reached out to me for verbal humiliation for virtual.
Mm-hmm.
So what would happen is it's a little different with virtual. I don't really more so need their ID, but right. I will still ask for references, and a deposit has to be paid up front. So they'll reach out and say, hey, mistress, I'm interested in a verbal humiliation session for an hour on Skype. Please let me know next steps. That's the ideal client because we know we get some idiots.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Then I'll be like, this is my price for like an hour. So for my verbal humiliation, I would charge $500 an hour online.
Mm.
Or sometimes online, I'll cut it down to maybe I've done like $100 for 5 minutes or really whatever I'm feeling in that day, I might just say.
Okay.
My rates might just change.
Right.
That's the beauty of being a sex worker, a dom or whatever. Like your prices can change when you want to.
Exactly.
So I'll tell them like you have to pay half deposit up front to secure because I don't do anything without a deposit. I'll give them my Cash App, Google Pay, whatever they want to use to pay me. They send the money and then we set up the Skype. And then as soon as it comes on, usually I'll like as soon as the screen comes on, I'll tell them, don't look at me. Mm-hmm. So they have to look down into their lap or somewhere else and are allowed to look at me. And to me, that gives the mystery of what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
They know I'm right there in front of them on the screen, but it tortures them that they can't look at me.
Right.
You know, I go through the things with them. I tell them like safe words, soft and hard limits. I ask them if they consent to being recorded for content. If they say no, I cannot record.
Mm-hmm.
They're not allowed to record me. They might tell me like their soft and hard limits. And then from there, we go right into the session. So I would just start verbally humiliating them. Like, look at you, loser. You think you're so grateful to be able to talk to me today. Your life is nothing without me. You live to serve me. You live and breathe to just wake up every day and look at my pictures and wish you could see me in person.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll just, they love it. And yeah. They'll be like, yes, mistress. So after everything I say, I tell them you have to say yes, mistress, or yes, Mistress Marley.
Mm hmm.
So that's pretty much a virtual session. You just go through verbal humiliation. Most of the time, I just wing it. It's kind of like freestyled. I try not to come off too scripty
right.
or scripted.
I was just going to ask you if you had a script. So
no. Mm-mm. So I don't work with scripts because it becomes unauthentic at that point.
Yeah.
So that's a virtual session. So then the session will end and I still do aftercare. So aftercare and BDSM is basically checking in on the person after the session to make sure they're mentally, emotionally, physically well
wow.
Before you end a session with them. A good dom will do aftercare, whether it's virtual or in person. Because think about it. You just did all this crazy shit to somebody, whether it's verbally or physically, and you're just going to send them home. How do you think they would feel? How would you feel if you went and got beat up or whipped for an hour and then they just said bye?
Mm-hmm.
It would feel weird because now you have to go back into the regular world. So,
right. Did you learn yeah. that on your own?
Yeah, so I learned aftercare on my own when I first started out. Over time, even now, I still attend virtual classes. So there's other BDSM and sex educators, Black educators that I support on Instagram and stuff.
Mm.
And if they're holding a course, I'll try to go or try to show up. Black Dom Sorority, we even hold our own courses and bring in instructors. So I'm always still learning. I never see myself as a dom that knows everything.
Interesting. I mean, I wouldn't have thought of aftercare. It makes yeah. so much sense the way you said mm-hmm. it, but I would have been like, yeah, people just put their clothes on over there, whatever, and get out of there. but yeah, mentally and emotionally, someone could not be right after that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And even doing aftercare for myself as a dom, like I have to come down from that space of just dominating someone, you know, I have yeah. to chill out a little.
So what do you do to come down?
So to come down, really, it's just me talking to the sub after the session, like, how was it, you know, getting the feedback. And then it's like coming home, maybe having a glass of wine, taking a bubble bath, talking on the phone with my friends.
Mm-hmm.
I might even met up with my friends for dinner after to bring me back into vanilla space. Like, it's really just telling myself that the session's over. I did great. Mm-hmm. I was my good kinky self. And then it does not, you know, affect the rest of my day,
right.
you know. So,
is there adrenaline associated with being a dom? Like, do you get a rush from it?
Oh, definitely. When I see someone bent over in front of me and I'm about to whip them, I'm just like, yes. Like, it's a big rush.
Wow. Yeah. I know. I can totally see that. So tell me about in person then.
So with in person, there's a little bit more that goes into that with me. There's more prep because now I have to put on the outfit and get all nice and pretty and stuff.
Yeah.
So with in person, it's definitely before when we have our discussion on the internet or if we like talk on the phone or whatever, it's definitely getting that ID, that screening, those references. This is after the public meet I've had with you. And I usually try to only book dungeon spaces in New York. The reason why I prefer dungeon spaces over hotels is because dungeons always come with employees working that know what's going on. They know you're doing BDSM.
Wait, can you tell us what a dungeon is?
So basically a dungeon is a space or a venue that has all the BDSM equipment from, you know, the crosses to the spanking benches to the whips, the chains, all those things. So it's specific spaces where BDSM things go down.
Okay.
And I always like to book dungeons versus hotels because at dungeons, you have employees working that know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have cameras. You're going to have someone always there, some sort of security if something's going on. It's just an overall great place to have sessions, in my opinion.
Right.
Now, hotels, I don't like because with hotels, you have to bring your own security. If you get caught, I mean, you know, the hotel workers don't know what you're doing in there. Anything can happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not as safe. I only do hotels if dungeons aren't available. If I do a hotel, I bring security with me. Whether that's a girlfriend, a guy friend, security I hire,
mm-hmm.
I always bring security. I always tell my subs, too, that I'm bringing security.
Right.
If my subs are like, no, I don't want security, I don't do the session. Because if you don't want security, that's a red flag. Why are you concerned about who I'm bringing to protect me?
Right.
That says something about you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So usually it'll be like the in-person. So if it's a dungeon, I don't mind if they get there first because usually like the employee will make them wait. If it's a hotel, I try to get there first because with hotels, you want to make sure you know all your exits. You don't want them to get there first because you don't want them to be possibly putting recording devices in there or hiding weapons. Like just as a sex worker, there's so many things we have to do to protect ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I teach this a lot to people also. I'll just say from a dungeon point of view that they'll get there first or I'll get there first. I set up. I always bring my own music because I love to have music during my sessions that reflect how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
I'll play like some Megan Thee Stallion or Rihanna or something or Beyonce. I just really like to feel like in that mode.
Yeah.
And then they'll get there. I'll go over the same thing, solve power limits, any injuries, the safe word. And then I usually just tell them to get undressed because when I'm humiliating in person, I like them to be completely naked and completely vulnerable. That's part of my humiliation.
Mm.
Yeah, so I always make sure it's consensual. If they ever were like, no, I don't want to get undressed, then, you know, that's fine. We can still do the session. It would just be clothed or whatever. So, yeah, and then whatever they booked, whether it was foot worship, pet play, which is walking them on a leash,
mm-hmm.
whether it was spanking, wax play, pegging.
What's wax
face
play?
Face smothering. So wax play is when you just take the candle wax and you drip it over them.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whether it's face smothering, when I, you know, just sit on their face and smother them or whatever, I do that fully clothed.
Right.
But I do them to smother them.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's licking my boots, whether it's verbal humiliation, whatever it was set out for the session, we just do the session.
Man. So
yeah.
What's the pricing for, like, compared to a virtual session for an in-person?
In-person would be between $200 to $300 more of something that is virtual.
So okay.
Say a verbal humiliation online was $500. In-person, it would be $700 or $800.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I'm in-person, I had to take my time to come see you, get dressed, bring all my tools,
yeah.
and do all these things. It's a different experience, so it'll cost more.
For sure. So speaking of walking people on leashes,
mm-hmm.
You arrived in a corset top and yellow snakeskin pants at North Carolina Central University's homecoming with a white man on a leash.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us that story, please?
Oh, wow. That was 2019, November 2019, and that's what made me go viral.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very unexpected. My friends knew I was a dominatrix, so that was like nothing to them to see that. But I remember, like, I was going back to my homecoming ever since I came back from, you know, New York. So this is my first homecoming since I moved out of New York. I was like, let me go back. And I was like, what can I do while I'm out there? How can I make some money? Because I was still, like, a new, fresh dom.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't making as much as I'm making now. So I posted on FetLife, which is, like, a kinky Facebook. It's FetLife.com. I made an ad, and I was like, you know, I want to do a session while I'm in North Carolina, preferably humiliation.
Mm.
So an older sub reached out to me. He was like, I would love to do this. I would love to book a session with you. And I was like, okay, great. I want to do humiliation at my school's homecoming during the tailgate. And it's the HBCU. And he was like, he would love to do it or whatever. So I remember I get to North Carolina. The session was like 3 days later. Uh-huh. Day of the session, the sub is like waiting on campus at, since like 9 o'clock in the morning, even though the tailgate wasn't until like 1 p.m. He was very excited. And all my friends just like, oh my God, this is going to be so interesting. So blah, blah, blah. I was like, well, to let you guys know, like I'm still in session. So like, don't, you know, distract me or anything of that nature. Cause mm-hmm. I was still seeing it as just a client that's paying, like I'm still in session. So we get there and I try to get the leash around his neck, but his neck was so fat that it could only fit around his wrist. So that's why in the picture you see the leash on his wrist.
Yeah, I was looking at that. Yeah.
Yes, that wasn't on purpose. That was because I had no choice and I really wanted to make it happen because I was like, he's all the way here. I'm not going to tell him to go home just because the leash doesn't fit around his neck.
Right.
So I put the leash on him, still in session. My friends are standing around just amazed, but still in session. I'm going over the soft and hard limits as if I wouldn't any in-person session. Mm-hmm. I tell him the safe words. I let him know like the intensity of the situation because when I put the leash on him, we were in like an empty parking lot. So we hadn't yet walked into the thick of the crowd.
Right.
As we get into the thick of the crowd, I can just feel his excitement. He was very excited.
Wow. That's crazy. Okay, so wait, yeah. I have a couple questions. What's the typical, like, what types of guys are the subs that want to be humiliated?
I get a lot of tech people. A lot of tech people.
Okay.
I've had some Wall Street clients. I've even had some NFL clients before.
Interesting.
Yeah, so usually it's the tech people. I've had some college students, but they can't, like, afford as much. So they have, like, they'll do the foot worship sessions or something like that.
Right.
But, yeah, that's pretty much techie. I'm going to say the tech guys are into being subs.
Yeah, well, and tech guys are mainly white male.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, is it just men?
No, so I've had women as clients, too. I've had black women as clients. I've had a white woman as a client before. Well, women, I tend to be a bit more nurturing. So it puts me in a different space, like, than humiliating a man versus a woman. So I want to say I'm more of a nurturing dom with women and more sadistic with men.
Okay. And then so yeah. When his leash didn't fit around his neck, did you humiliate him for that?
No, I didn't humiliate him for that. It was just more so let me just try to get the leash around his wrist.
Right. Because it was showtime. Yeah.
Yeah. And I hadn't gone into session yet.
So what was the reaction of the crowd? You said he was excited. What did people do when you're walking through with this white man on a leash?
Oh, wow. With so many comments. There was like, what the fuck? There was like, what is this? Some people was like, yes, sis. Like some people was like, oh my God. Oh my God. Like, what is she doing? Like, and like all those different types of things. So, I mean, it's an all black school. It's a black woman walking an older white man on a leash. Like mm-hmm. It's going to attract some attention.
Yes.
But the scene that is shown in the video is, I didn't even know someone was recording on the side. I had told my best friend to stop and take a picture of me for content because the guy was fine with his face being, you know, out there. And then when, you know, the session was over and I did aftercare and, you know, sent him home and we ended up just drinking the rest of our night at our homecoming. I remember we went home, went to our Airbnb, we passed out and I woke up the next morning and my Twitter was like on fire.
Yes. Well, because in the video that I saw, you're kind of, it looks like you're letting him know that it's okay to move. Like you've stopped him.
Yeah.
And then you're telling him, and you look gorgeous, by the way.
Thank you.
I mean, you are gorgeous, but you look really good in that video. And then you're like telling him like, oh, okay, let's go. Like I would have
like, get up.
Yeah. That was just really interesting to me. I've never seen anything like that. I have a few more questions to ask you before we close.
Okay.
Tell me, when we talked about pain earlier, you said you haven't had anybody that's like where they've wanted something that you're not comfortable with regarding pain.
Right.
What about draining bank accounts? Do you go all the way to, it says zero? Do you stop at a certain point? Like, how does that work?
So I don't really see their account hit zero because a drain is mostly them just sending money on their own to me through Cash App.
Okay.
So they're sending $50, $100, $200, just random amounts back to back to back.
Mm-hmm.
So they know what they're spending. I don't really see their account like that.
Right, right.
But I mean, it's all consensual, so they will stop when it's time to stop.
Mm-hmm.
Usually we'll get subs that'll be like, oh, you drained me. I have nothing left. But that's really the role play of it. They have money left. It's just the fantasy of them telling me that, like, I have nothing left. I have no more money. What am I going to do? But they have money. It's just like a role play.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I found you because you were on the cover of the style section of the New York Times Sunday edition. I forgot to mention that. The most read paper in the world, probably. Is what you do legal? Like, do you pay taxes? How does that work?
Yes. Yeah, so I definitely pay taxes. So I do all my kink education through a website called Patreon.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Patreon sends you that tax information at the beginning of every year. They take out taxes. So they send you all of those W-9 forms, all those things when you sign up on Patreon. I also dominate clients through OnlyFans, and OnlyFans sends you that information, too. So a lot of these websites that sex workers sign up on, it's always funny when I see people on the internet like, oh, the IRS is going to come after sex workers. Like, we have to fill out these forms online that are tracking us, that have our real names. Uh-huh. And when you sign up for these websites, such as OnlyFans, you have to provide ID. When you sign up for Patreon, you have to provide bank account and social security number, things of that nature. So I always make sure I'm doing my taxes. I have someone that helps me with my taxes. Being a dominatrix isn't illegal in the state of New York, but in other states it is. So there's this website called Sex Worker Laws that you can look up A through Z, and it'll show you like what states is illegal or not. My work, I want to say, kind of goes into, I don't want to say troubled waters, but a little sensitive when I start talking about like pegging.
Okay.
Right. That's why I don't really, because it's seen as a sexual, you know, act. That's why I don't really advertise pegging like that outwardly. Mm-hmm. I don't really put it out there on my site that I offer that or whatever. So those things can get a little like weird.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So now the last thing I want to talk about is, what is Black Dom Sorority?
So Black Dom Sorority was created July 2019. So we're coming on our 2-year birthday this July. So it was created when I came into FinDom and noticed there were no spaces for Black people or Black women, or where I saw that there were more white doms and not really Black doms. So it started off as just a Facebook group with my friends. After I went viral, it grew to like almost 2,000 members. Wow. And then I was like, this is too much. There's no way I can protect people's privacy with this. We're on Facebook just openly talking about this type of work. This isn't safe. So I was like, let me move to a more encrypted, you know, thing, or somewhere we can chat. So I made like a Discord and we're on there, and there's only like 100 members now. There's more of an NDA and ID process and vetting and stuff like that, because not only are you coming into a group with other women and other dominatrix and other sex workers that are sharing private information, but you're also coming into a group ran by myself, Mrs. Marley, who needs to protect her brand and, you know, things going on. So we're a very close-knit group. We are in the Northeast, West Coast, South, Midwest, and we're international now. We hold brunches, events, classes. We did a toy drive for sex workers that have children and they needed toys for Christmas. We have done sex worker activist marches last summer. It's just so many different things. So it's really like a sorority, but just for sex workers and dominatrix.
That's so great. I'm guessing that you did it specifically because there wasn't anybody to help you come up.
Yes, and that's specifically why I did it. That's the exact reason.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's beautiful. Yeah. That's really like a, that's what Scott and I hope for in these stories, is like somebody who may have had something, whatever, whatever their only one thing is, and then they can, you know, turn it into something great, and then they can share it with other people.
Right, exactly.
And that's like the most beautiful thing. So, boy, you gave me an education, Mistress Marley. For real.
Yes.
Really quickly, your Patreon is how much per?
So my Patreon is only $5 per month.
$5 per month. Okay.
Yes.
And people can have access to content they wouldn't have otherwise, right?
Yes.
Yeah. That's great. That's great. Tell me, because you're everywhere, but tell me where people can find you specifically.
So you can find me on Twitter, which Twitter is eyes, like your eyes, X on fire. Or you can just type in Mistress Marley and I'll come up on Twitter.
Yep. That's how I found you.
Yeah. And then I'm on YouTube, the Chocolate Dom.
Okay. I'm already following you on Twitter, so that's exciting.
I don't think I'm allowed to follow you. But
you can follow her. tell me what's next for you.
So I am having a goddess brunch.
Okay.
We have sold out at 100 guests. Nice. And it's basically going to be a brunch for aspiring doms or aspiring people that just want to get into like having their life getting paid just for existing. It's for women. They'll be able to network with other like-minded women, and we'll have brunch and an open bar. And then we're also going to teach a class during the brunch on real subs.
That is great. That's great. You are doing big things. 3 years you've been doing this?
Yes.
Wow. I'm so impressed.
Yeah, good job.
That's amazing. Thank you. Thank you so much for taking all this time to talk to us and tell us about.
Thank you so much.
Man, like I said, in education, I appreciate it and I appreciate you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Smiley. Awesome.
Thank you for listening to The Only One in the Room. Please join us each Tuesday and Sunday for an incredible brand new Only One interview. And every Friday for On My Nightstand, where I'll be reading something that I love. If you have an Only One story you'd like to share, or a piece of writing you'd like to submit, please send it to theonlyonepod@gmail.com. From all of us at The Only One in the Room, we wish you dopeness, health, and prosperity.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's H-Y-P-E-R-T-H-E-T-I-C-A-L.